Hello, welcome to True Hoop with me, Gerard Hector, and Coach David Thorpe. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm happy. How are you?
You are happy, David. One of you know, you have one biological son, but many adopted sons. Let's just say, not like legally adopted, but men who you call your sons. And one of your sons, Ryan Pinone, in his first year as the lead assistant with the Alabama Crimson Tide men's basketball team, is going where? The Final Four. How happy are you right now?
I mean, I've had players make it, guys that I, you know, coached for 4 years of high school. Mm-hmm. So one of them I knew when he was 14 years old, 13. Doesn't get much better than that. Knowing, first of all, I have friends that have coached 30 years, are really good, never have made it to the Final Four. It's unbelievable. He's worked so hard. I was telling you guys this morning, Ryan used to go to the Final Four when he was a high school coach. He was working for me in the summer. And he would get a room with some other people, sleep on the floor, and he would bring CDs of highlight reels for his high school players to hand out to college coaches to try to get him scholarships. Like he was a worker. Nothing's changed. I spoke to him this morning. I think it was 5:30 a.m. his time, 6:30 my time. I don't really know if Alabama's on our Eastern time zone or not. I really don't know. But I know it was 6:30 for me. And I texted him some thoughts for their game coming up, and he called me right away. He's earned it, but it's still good fortune. Yeah, it's, you know, I didn't ever promise him any of this. I did say you'll learn a lot about the game if you stick with me, and he did. And then he's taken it way past me. And people like J.J. Redick's talking about on his show. Like, people are tweeting about it. And Nate Oates is such this amazing, humble coach who admits, like, we've got data people that help us at our GA. There was a Washington Post wrote an article just about the GAs. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw it. The Washington, at the arena, they couldn't even sit behind their own team because there was no room. So they sent them across. Well, that's where the journalists sat. So these guys are yelling and screaming the whole game. They're calling out every call coming, which every guy would know, that scout. And the journalists were like, hey, who are these guys? And the Post wrote an article about it. So Nate does, he really gives a lot of people a lot of things. We'll talk about Alabama later because they're basically the 31st NBA team. If you remove the G League teams.
Right.
Actually, Alabama plays more like NBA teams than some of the G League teams do. But yeah, they kind of really leaned into playing the NBA way. One reason why Ryan's there. And they're in the Final Four for the first time in school history. Let me see. It's not like that program doesn't win some sporting events.
They're pretty good at football. Right? They're pretty good at football. Right?
So now they've got basketball. They've got some good players in the game too. This group didn't coach Colin Sexton.
Yeah,
but he's ended up having a big time season, kind of resurging year. So yeah, they've had a bunch of guys. So I am overjoyed, and my wife and I will be watching the game Saturday night for sure.
Well, that is wonderful, and as David said, we will talk about Alabama a little bit later. Yeah. But David, the two of the hottest teams in the NBA faced off against each other last night, and the Mavericks stopped the Rockets' 11 game winning streak. And the Mavericks themselves are on quite a heater of their own. This is now 7 straight for them, 9-1 of their last 10. You know, we talk about Luka and Kyrie all the time, and that's probably where this conversation is going to start when I ask you this question, but what are they doing so well over their last 10 games?
I mean, they're defending and rebounding as much as anything. They were not a good defensive team, and I think there's three teams. I'll quiz you. There are one that are top 10 in offense and defense. I guarantee you'll get the second one right.
Last 10 games?
Last 15 games.
Okay. Boston for sure.
So for sure. All right. Think about it, you'll get it if you think about it.
Well, let me guess you a clue. Western or Eastern Conference team?
Let's put it this way. Super hot team.
The Rockets.
Right. Yeah. When you win, when you don't lose, right. You're gonna be a really high ranked. So that's it. There's three teams. And they're right there. That was not the case for them much of the year.
Yeah.
As you know, we've referenced it. We wrote an article about how the Mavs won the trade deadline. One thing I really liked about the Gafford acquisition was he was an upgrade on Lively, but also it gave them 48 minutes of the same player. I wrote that pretty much word for word. I believe it was just like that. They always now have a rim-protecting jumper and a lob threat who can get to 13 feet. Mm-hmm. And there's real value to that for when you have Luka and Kyrie coming downhill. So you have to make a choice. Those choices are easier made when it's Maxi Kleber or Dwight Powell, which is easier.
Yeah.
So they've got 48 minutes if they want. If they don't want to go big, they don't have to, but they normally do. And Gafford's good. It just,
yeah.
I think there's a lesson to be learned about how easy it is for teams mm-hmm. and the media to label players when they're losing mm-hmm. as if it's any one player's fault correct. That they're losing. Certainly at a center spot who can't bring the ball up the court or anything. He was at the mercy of how the team was playing in Washington. Mm-hmm. And Gafford's just a good player.
Yeah.
And I wrote then that I thought he'd end up being a starter for them, and he is. And I think it's good for Lively to come off the bench. I hear he's a great kid. That isn't an issue. And so you've got those two incredible offensive players. What did Luka have, 47 in the game?
Yes.
I mean, they smoked him out. The Mavericks crunched him the first two quarters.
Sure did.
And it didn't matter after that.
Yeah.
I don't know that Jason Kidd – I've never thought Jason Kidd was any good, but I can't argue with what he's done. They, with the right – with this personnel, they're – when you know, you said the other day about a team you want to play in the postseason, all these teams can be scary in the postseason, mm-hmm. but they don't have Luka on their team.
Correct.
Or Kyrie.
Correct.
That's a – that's not nothing,
no,
as you like to say. That's not nothing.
That is in a playoff – I mean, Luka in any playoff series, which would include playing against Jokic, could be the best player on the floor, which is number one
right.
problem.
Right.
And then you're number right. two is Kyrie Irving. That's really hard to overcome. Over the last 10 games, the Mavericks seventh on offensive efficiency, third in defense, and second in adjusted net rating, which, you know, that's telling the story right there. They're guarding. They're giving a shit on that end of the floor. And that we said that was the thing, right? They learn to do anything semblance of defense, on offense will be fine. That's, wow. Now you can see it. If they're in the right spot, and depending on who gets the one seed and goes where, remember I said months ago, I can see this team getting the conference finals, and now it's starting to look like, oh. So I want to look at,
yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, sometimes I wonder, I don't have to wonder, I don't know about this situation, but I do think that, and we'll talk about another team later that's kind of going the opposite direction, belief in the locker room of, oh, we got the people. You have to believe in the staff, which I don't think they did, but you also have to believe in the people, the personnel. And PJ Washington's a good player too. I don't think he's even playing well for them. I haven't looked the last couple games, but I think he'll get better with them than he was in Charlotte. Because again, it's a bad situation. And I just think, yeah, Luka's probably feeling like, oh, we, and then Kyrie and Luka are pairing lovely
beautiful.
Together.
Beautiful.
Yeah, they're just playing beautiful music together. And so the belief of like, oh man, we got the goods.
We got those two dudes.
Oh yeah.
So it allows Tim Hardaway Jr. to play with a little bit more. Josh Green. Everybody's got a little bit more bounce in their step, and like, yeah, we can do these things. It's kind of nice.
Yeah. What does Andy Dufresne say? Hope is the best of things. I don't think hope is a strategy, but if you have a good strategy, hope is a force multiplier. You know, you have to have a good strategy for sure, and then hope's a force multiplier because. It does give you that little added incentive to just, you know, I'm not going to have that next beer. I'm going to go ahead and get to sleep now.
Yep.
I'm not going to have that ham sandwich. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I'm going to set that screen. I'm going to race back on defense, even though it looks like they're going to get a dunk. It's something I look at a lot mm-hmm. are who's racing back when it looks like the other team has a race out. You always have to. If it's obvious, there's no way they're not going to miss this. But I'd like to see that connective tissue of the extra pass, the extra play, the extra effort. Consistently
yeah.
and not, oh, I'm going to get my shot here because mm-hmm. I'm going to get the ball for a while.
Yep.
That's easier to create when you have hope that we can be special this year.
Well, it's we, right? And not me. And that's such a huge part of winning. Yeah. So I just mentioned, you know, could you see this team making the conference finals? And for sure I can. So right now they're the 5 seed, 2 games back of the Clippers. And I'm like, ooh, could they catch the Clippers? And the Clippers are 2 games ahead of them. And I'll go over who both teams are playing next. Right now, OKC is the 1 seed by half a game. So, right, if you get that 4 and it stays that way, and if you're Dallas, well, playing OKC in round 2 probably more enticing than playing the Denver Nuggets in round 2 if they were to have the 1 seed, right? So all these little things are kind of like in your mind, like, ooh, what's happening? So let's look at the Mavericks next 5. They got at the Warriors, the Hawks, the Warriors at home, the Rockets at home, and then at the Hornets. So a schedule that's like
4 tough games.
I'm sorry?
4 tough games.
So you
say, right when you say four,
so you say the two Warriors games for sure,
right?
The Rockets three, the Hawks. I mean, they're kind of in there. They're in there playing, but they're playing well. I mean, DeJounte Murray is doing
right.
You're right. Yes, right. You're correct. Four tough games. No pushovers. Yeah. Hornets are that's the only walkover game is the Hornets.
Well, the Hornets want to lose.
Yes.
The other teams don't want to lose.
Correct.
Yeah. It's not hard. It's not rocket science here.
No, no.
Hornets, aren't they one of the teams along losing streak?
Yeah, they certainly are. They certainly are.
Yeah. That's they don't want to win games. So who wouldn't want to schedule those teams?
Listen, you want the Hornets, Blazers, Jazz, and Raptors on your schedule right now. If you're trying to get, those are the teams you want to play because they don't give a shit about winning right now.
I would say just the opposite. They do give a shit about not winning.
There you go.
Right. They're gonna find a way to lose. It seems to me anyway. Sure. So you got to give them every reason to find a way, right?
For sure. And the Clippers, they're at the Kings. They have the Nuggets, the Jazz, the Cavs, and the Suns. So interesting for the Clippers. Also, I'd say they have four tough games as well. Yeah. With the Jazz being a team that's also trying to lose. So, you know, whatever. Yeah. They're right on that. But that'll be interesting because Cleveland game, while Cleveland is trying to win, they're not playing well, and we'll talk about them. It'll be very, and the Kings, sadly for them, Malik Monk being hurt, that's a real problem because that's sixth man of the year. I mean, he is just lightning off the bench, and no one can stay in front of that kid. So it's going to be a little tough for the Kings now as we roll down the stretch here. I did mention the teams that are losing a lot. Blazers, Jazz, and Raptors, those are the longest active losing streaks at 9-9 and 13 games respectively.
And the Blazers have taken it to another level. I saw the Miami game. Woo! Let me rephrase that. I saw the Miami opportunity to play against them. I would not call it a game.
They wouldn't even play a game.
No, they lost by a lot of points.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Listen,
that game was I wrote something, maybe it was on Facebook. That every college team in the NCAA tournament will beat every high school team by 50 points. Every G League team will beat every college team by 50 points. Right. And every NBA team will beat G League team by at least 30. That was a G League game, even though they had some NBA players on it.
Okay.
Versus the Heat.
Okay, yeah, got it. That's it. And folks, listen, all these games matter, right? We are the Sunday the 13th or 14th, whatever day Sunday is. That's the last day of the regular season. So we got... It's really crunch time for all these teams now to figure out where they're going to be. The Clippers want to, I'm sure, hold on to that four seed and have home court in round one. Again, Denver, Minnesota, and OKC still battle. No one's clinched it yet. Half a game.
So to your point, you can't be LA playing the game of who do we play next round. You have no idea. You might as well host first two games of round one.
You try to win as much and you get that and get round one at home.
I think so.
That's your best choice because you probably won't know until, again, last game of the season who's the number one seed. So I think it's smart for them. Okay, a team that's going in the opposite direction, David, the Cavaliers, just been really struggling. I know Donovan Mitchell's been out, so that matters. But, you know, some of the games are losing and teams are losing to, they really shouldn't be. And they got Darius Garland, they got Evan Mobley's back, and Jarrett, they've got good players. Max Strus, George Niang, like, they shouldn't be losing a lot of these games. What are you seeing on the floor from the Cleveland Cavaliers lately?
They're not defending. Yeah, they're not rebounding quite what they were. They were used to be an offensive rebounding team, good defensive rebounding team, elite, elite, elite. I think I looked it up recently. From the first game of the season till maybe February 1st, they were second in the league in defense. And it's just fallen apart now. They're like bottom 10 the last 15 games, whatever. I was talking to, you'll like this, I was talking to a player maybe in the last week, a starter in the league. Very good player who said he was raving about Darius Garland, how hard he is to guard, and that Donovan being out, you know, really hurts them because he's also impossible to guard. And so I said, you know, would you say they're the most disappointing team? And he said, oh no, the Lakers are the best team that isn't winning. This was LA has been playing better, but this is right before they started. But he thought LA was the best team on paper that wasn't like a top three team. And didn't realize these guys don't follow what I write. He had no idea. And but he said Cleveland in the East, he just thought they could be really good.
Yeah.
And they were until they're not. And so just talking to some people, you can see there's not buy-in. It seems we just talked about hope being a force multiplier. Mm-hmm. Absence of hope is a killer. And so maybe they are just realizing this coach, this staff,
just, we don't believe
not going to get us in the position. Yeah. And it's having an effect that kind of trickles down to everybody else. So it's too bad. You and I were both super high on them for a long time.
So high. They were up towards the top of the league, David, most of the year. You mentioned about February 1st in adjusted net rating. Like, I was like, oh, yeah. I said to them, this is the year they're going to win the playoff series. They're ready. They got all the pieces. And now I'm like, you might not even hold on to that three spot. The Knicks might catch you. And you're down to
probably
four now.
Will.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably will. They'll probably drop. Yeah. And who knows? They're only a couple games above Indiana at six, I think, correct, in the loss column.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's not many games left. Was it seven games left for most teams? Mm-hmm. Seven, 8 games mm-hmm. typically?
Yep.
Yeah. So 2 games can still, you know, go 4-4 and the other team goes 6-2 and you could have, you know, a 2-way tie there.
No, it is interesting to see. And really, you're kind of now, because no one besides Boston has got their self locked up into where they're going to be and know they've got home court advantage clinched, everyone's still. So you're seeing the cracks, David, or you're seeing the teams who believe and have resolve and hope now, right? Because this is the pressure cooker. 7 games, we got to solidify and do what we're doing. And the teams that are like wobbly, well, we know you guys don't have it, right? Cleveland, Phoenix up and down, right? Who you've been all year, right? We're seeing it. And the teams that, no, we believe. Houston, Dallas, right? Teams that are like, no, we're winning. Like, and obviously the teams that are still being in the top three fighting, you're seeing everybody come out and it's showing now. And I think, yeah, it's a shame for Cleveland, unfortunately. Really, really shame. All right. The 76ers.
Hard league, man.
Yeah, well,
it's a hard league.
Winning, yes. As you say, winning in this league, really difficult.
Just think about it. If we tracked all the teams in our top five, you would see, I mean, Boston's never left. Mm-hmm. Denver's been out a couple of times, mm-hmm. but like 6 or 7. Mm-hmm. But there's been plenty of teams bubble up, right, and then bubble down, and then bubble way down. But Cleveland's way down right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a hard league.
Very, very hard league. Speaking of a team that was in our top five for a while and has not been in quite some time for obvious reason, they're missing who would have been like the likely MVP. Joel Embiid might be back, David, this week. And I have to say, I am surprised. This seems very fast to me. Looks like it might be the Miami game this week. Look, obviously, if Joel feels like he's ready, the team feels like he's ready, all that, good to go. And we know this team's not going to do anything unless he's present in the postseason. That's clear. But what kind of player is he going to be? Guys haven't played organized NBA basketball in, what, 2 months?
So the idea, I guess, would be you're onboarding him now,
right,
with the hope that by the time he gets to round one, he's moving pretty good. It doesn't mean he'll be at his best, although he has been rehabbing, so it's not like he's not fresh that way. But still, you're trying to get him acclimated to the rhythms again, the speed of the game. In a sense, it's his preseason.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, it's his preseason. Players that miss the preseason tend to have bad Novembers,
yep,
bad October Novembers. They're just because their practices aren't like a college practice. It's slower and not as intense typically. Miami might be a difference. Might be different. Most teams aren't. So I think that's what they're thinking. Let's just get them acclimated again to the bumps and speed. The speed, really, intensity. I would think they'll limit his minutes some.
I would imagine so.
Pretty significantly.
Yeah, I would hope so.
Fitness becomes a question,
mm-hmm,
because he's going to have to do some extra work to get it first round. Luckily for them, first round, you tend to have nice times off between games. So he'll have good recovery times too. But it's interesting. They're finding ways to stay positive without him. I mean, on court positive,
yeah,
in terms of plus minus. That would go really well to help them when he's out.
Yeah. I mean, by the way, Philly, there's no guarantee that they're going to make the playoffs. They're in the play-in spot right now. They're the 8, which means they play 7-8, and 7-8 right now would be Miami. So let's assume the Heat win that game. So the Heat now, you then play the winner of the 9-10 matchup, which would be Bulls-Hawks. And we've talked about the Bulls this morning, and we talked about the Hawks just now. None of those are going to be easy games, like, because those
and,
teams...
And one and done, anything's possible.
Correct.
And losing is possible. And then the winner gets Boston.
Yay, congratulations.
Boy, imagine Boston thinking this is some bullshit. Tell you what, if anyone's got leverage, it'll be the Celtics. If they lose round one to Embiid, like, that's the thanks we get for rolling through the regular season. You'll start seeing more pushback on how we do the seedings after the play-in. Let the first round, let the number one seed pick their guys. You'll see it.
Because In a hypothetical scenario, David, what you're alluding to is that over these next 7 to 8 games that Embiid comes back and he slowly ramps up, and let's assume they win the play-in in some form or fashion, whether it be
second round,
and that you're like, oh, crap, we got Embiid who's getting his rhythm back and together, because this was a man who, before he got injured, we were like...
destroying the league.
Destroying everyone.
Yeah. His numbers were incredible. Incredible. Unguardable. And cheat code. Absolutely. Like, joke, it's cheat code every way possible. And on both ends.
And I mean, look, it's highly unlikely he becomes that all of a sudden, but God, if he did, yikes. You're top seed, you're like, shit, man.
A reasonable facsimile gives Porzingis a lot of problems.
That's sure right. 80% of himself.
Reasonable facsimile.
Yeah.
He's just an amazing, amazing player. And, you know, you could argue, I think, that in many of their playoff series, there's a weight on the shoulders of, you know, the pressure of, you know, he hasn't made it past round two. Mm-hmm. There's no weight this year.
Right.
Like, everyone understands.
Yeah, you're hurt.
So you wonder if that could help him a little bit. Make him a little lighter.
Ooh, I like, look, see, Thorpe always zags when people zig. A little like, oh, what about this? It's a good one. No one, you guys are a play-in team. Nobody cares. You're not going to do anything.
It's old age. So, I mean, I've been following NBA playoffs. What year were you born?
78.
Okay, so I followed the Lakers in the early 70s, but I was 7. Right, so we're like, right. I don't know, remember anything.
Right.
Other than Jerry West was known as Mr. Clutch, I knew that. But I remember the 1980. I watched Seattle with downtown Fred Brown. I watched those games, but I was preteen. But once I was, you know, 15, 1980, so you were in diapers. Like, I mean, I did not just watch these games, Gerard. I was fucking locked in. Now, they were tape delayed.
Right, of course.
At 11:30 at night. But I lived for every moment, me and my brother. So it's just old age. You just remember this kind of shit. And so I do, as someone who worked with athletes all the time, anxiety is a thing.
Real.
And pressure is a thing. And confidence is a thing. And Embiid has had some bad moments.
Sure has.
And the Sixers have a bunch. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like, you're playing Boston. There's just no expectation. You can only win.
Correct.
Like, everyone expects you to get killed.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that's a dangerous spot for Joel Embiid to be in for the other team, you know?
Yeah, no, especially if he's, like you said, a reasonable facsimile, 80% and getting stronger. That could be trouble. Look out. Wow.
80% of Joel Embiid still might be tied for, you know, with SGA as the best player in the league. SGA and Jokic, the Jokic decides to play 100%.
Correct.
His 100% is better than Embiid's 80, for right. sure. But Porzingis' 100% is not as good as Embiid's 80.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
Not
no. And Joel, he's a problem solver for more than just Porzingis because of his space heating inside and offensive, his ability to score, get fouled, give the Sixers always an out. We always have a plan. It makes it easy to play, but they've learned how to do some stuff without him. Mm-hmm. So when he's on the bench, they have a little more swagger to what they can do. We've done this before.
Yeah,
that's an interesting thing to see, Philly.
Could you imagine a series that all of a sudden is 2-2 tied, going back to Boston for game 5. Celtics are sweating that game.
Yeah. No, it's exactly. It's just all the weight. Now, not to say if it's 2-2 or even if 3-2 Boston and you're back in Philly for game 6, right. Boston feels stressed at that point. Sure. Like, hey, we're in this.
Yeah.
But those first few games, I mean, they're always going to be stress and pressure. They're trying to play well. These guys are competitive dudes and all that. It's not the same when no one expects you really to do it.
Correct.
And you have a built-in excuse. And it's Philly Boston. Yeah. Dr. J will be there.
That. Oh, yeah. All that.
Yeah. Kevin McHale will come back. Like, it's going to be a thing, man. Yeah.
All right, guys. We'll be back after a brief commercial break. This episode of True Hoop is brought to you by BetterHelp. Hey, guys. Gerard Hector from True Hoop here. You ever have a situation where a friend, a partner, or spouse does something and you sweep it under the rug like, no big deal? And then something else happens and you don't mention it because you don't want to make waves or ruffle feathers. But what happens is we end up holding on to these things and they become stressors. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. And when we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. I've been open about this in the past and you guys know I see a personal therapist as well as a couples therapist for my partner and I. And both are helpful for developing positive and coping skills and knowing how and when to set boundaries. Therapy empowers you to be the very best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/drewhoop today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/drewhoop. All right, so we open up the show talking about the Final Four, which is in Arizona this year, if I'm not mistaken.
Phoenix.
Yeah.
Glenmore. Yep. Glenmore, what is it called?
Oh, yeah. Glendale.
It's basically Phoenix.
Okay.
Glendale.
Okay, that's it. Yeah. And Alabama will be there. They face the UConn Huskies in their side of the bracket. David Sud.
Basically the Celtics of college.
David Sudry Pinnell will be
killing everybody.
He's already, I'm sure, been cranking tape since 1 a.m. this morning of UConn and how we're going to beat this thing. UConn, a very, very good team. They had a 30-0 run in their game to get to the final. Something ridiculous wrong with the other team, scored 0 points.
No, I think that's right. It was a close game with Illinois. I didn't watch a lot of it. I had it on, but I wasn't really paying attention. And I remember seeing 22-0, and I think it was 30-0 run to get a very good Illinois team. They were a 3 seed.
Which is just,
and they were good.
Insane. I was like, oh.
And yeah, that's why I said UConn's like the Celtics right now. They're just killing everyone. They've won a record, I think, 10 straight games in the NCAA tournament by double figures. It's never been
that's
done before.
That's a juggernaut right there.
They're trying to do what the Gators did with, and you know, I don't identify as a Gator anymore because I root for a lot of different teams, but deep in my subconscious.
Of course you're a Gator.
My mom was pounding the Gators to me when I was a child. I used to listen to college basketball games on the radio because it wasn't on TV. I went Florida. That was a special team. But this team is too. I've not really watched Connecticut closely. I will starting probably today. Not for Ryan. But we're doing an article on the Final Four a little bit with NBA talent. But yeah, they've got the work cut out for them. Connecticut's just crushing everyone.
But something that Alabama's doing, David, differently than a lot of other college programs, which is they're playing more like an NBA team. And this is over the last couple of years. We remember last year they had Brandon Miller, who was, drafted second. So they have NBA talent on that team. And you sent us a shot chart of Alabama's last game. And I was like, oh. This is like the Houston Rockets. All the dots are outside of threes or at the rim for layups and dunks. I was like, this is looking like the NBA. And we're seeing, right, that happens all the time, right? And it goes both ways. NBA game trickles down to college. College concepts and stuff trickle up to the NBA. We see it both ways. But what are you seeing from Alabama that makes them look like an NBA offense?
Well, so going back a year when I convinced Ryan, I tried to convince Ryan to leave the NBA at the end of the season and take an offer from Alabama that he thought was coming. It had not come yet, but they were negotiating. He was coming. And I just thought it was good for him and his family. I don't think he agreed with me until very recently that it was. He was 50-50 on it. And now it's looking pretty good. It worked out pretty good. Thank goodness. But people, friends of mine asked me why is Alabama getting these players? They must be paying so much. Well, first of all, you're allowed to pay now. Secondly, their NIL deals aren't as good as a lot of other teams because it's a football state. Those motherfuckers don't want to give money to basketball players. They want to save it for the quarterback and defensive end alignment and all that kind of stuff. So, of course, a couple years ago when Alabama first started getting going with their coach, Nate Oates, then the NIL wasn't existing. But Ryan answered the question when I asked, why are you getting these players? Because they've had some 5-star recruits before. He said Nate Oates wants to play more like the NBA and everyone else. And so what that means is, if you look at two things, I don't know about this year. I know for sure last year. This year, I'm sure it's top one or two. They lead the league in pace. They lead all Power Five conferences in pace and 3-point attempts. They shoot a lot of threes and they play super fast. And there's lots of ball movement and player movement off the ball. That's the NBA style. And they did something. Here's another NBA thing. They did something in the Carolina game in the Final Eight, Sweet 16, where Carolina's got a guard named Cadeau. Mm-hmm. I don't know any of these guys, but apparently a high-level player that can't shoot yet. He's just a freshman. Little guy, really talented playmaker. An NBA agent told me he's an NBA player, but he can't shoot right now as an 18-year-old. And so my son told me in the ACC tournament, everyone started guarding him in the paint. So he'd be behind three, and you just laid off in the paint. But you guard him with a guard. Alabama's got a 7-foot kid named Grant Nelson, who's very agile. Henry told us today, like lateral quickness off the charts, or P3, whatever. They had Grant. This is an NBA move. Put your big on the guy that can't shoot. to patrol the paint. He had 5 block shots in the game, was the man of the match. So that's a ceiling. That's another level up from the NBA that they're leveling down. And, play a good amount of guys. The ball is just flying around. There's not a lot of ISO stuff. Even though they have a ball dominant guard, he's chasing it, meaning throw it, go get it, throw it, go get it, not just dribble all the time. And the thing that's amazing is they didn't just lose Brandon Miller. Yeah. So a couple years ago, they lost Josh Primo, who would still be on the team now if he was back. Noah Clowney was first-round pick of the Nets. And a kid named Bediako is a G League player for the Spurs who's pretty talented center. They didn't expect to lose him, I'm sure. I don't think they expect to lose Clowney either. They were a Sweet 16 team last year, not a Final 8 team. So those guys back, and they're probably right there with Connecticut, 2 best teams in the country. But this is the way it goes. People leave early, you know? And, I wish more colleges would play this way. And we wrote an article, as you remember, last Thursday, where the NIL is really going to help college basketball in terms of keeping talent alive. And so what's going to happen is you're going to get a lot of mid-major players who prove they can really play, bubble up for more money and more prestige and a better chance to be drafted from an NBA team. And you're going to have a lot of veteran teams. And you can run more stuff with veteran teams than you can with freshmen. Mm-hmm. So I think you'll see a lot more. Like Nato's brought Ryan Pinona in part for his NBA acumen. You'll start seeing more of that if guys in the NBA are willing to do
right,
it.
Right.
If they're willing to come back down, bring their NBA knowledge to the college, and maybe always bubble back up. I promise you, Ryan Pinoa could get an NBA job tomorrow if he wanted it as an assistant. I guarantee you that. So you can always go up and down. Once you've established, you can really coach.
And we know Ryan can definitely do that for sure and develop players. So when we talk about playing with more pace and firing up more threes, we talked about how a lot of young kids leave college after 1 year, go straight to the NBA, or they were doing G League Ignite or whatever stuff they do. Do you feel like the reason why a lot of college coaches don't play that style is because they want to have control, like tight reins over what's going on every single possession, right? So it's like instead of racing up and down, no. And because those kids are young and we don't trust you to have 100 million possessions a game. Okay.
Yes. And also, you remember Zach Randolph?
Of course.
Obviously, you remember Zach Randolph. Yeah, you were born in 78, not 98. Zach Randolph, I'm not even sure he didn't come off the bench for Michigan State the whole season.
Yeah.
That was All-American. I think he came off the bench. There was no reason for that. I think Izzo was trying to keep him around another year. Mm. So you've got some of that too. It'll be less so now than before. I think they overcoach. I think they're afraid to let go for things you just said. And I think that keeping them around another year is something they really, really want. And now they have money to do it. Hey, you really want them? You value them? Pay them. Because if you don't, someone else might.
Yeah.
And the numbers that I'm getting this year from the players I help in college are the same guy that might have made $250 last year might make $450, $500 this year. Mm-hmm. And it's only going to go up. Yeah, we might do an article on this too, because the salary cap's going to rise.
For sure.
As people raise more and more money, there's more money in the coffers to pay these players so we can be competitive and maybe even better than competitive. And so I think you're going to start seeing players making a lot of money. And maybe the system won't be able to pay for itself. That I don't know. I don't know. A lot of these programs, they're not just devoting their own resources. They're raising money. Because we can't have colleges going into their billion-dollar endowments to help pay athletes, can we? I laugh when I hear coaches tell me they got to go raise money. I'm like, raise money. Your team's got an $11 billion endowment for the school. Wow. There's no better marketing for a college than your sports team.
You know who the at most colleges, I would imagine, probably have, not even antagonistic, but the relationship isn't sunny and roses, is the school president / provost, who's on the academic side in charge of the endowment, and the athletic director, right? It's like, I don't know if those guys are hanging out a lot, having coffee, drinking some wine or beer. I don't know. And that's the situation, right? It's like, you're not touching my money, you know?
Right. It's for sure. You're right. It's a supply and demand situation as I see it. Colleges, as someone who I'm just about done. My daughter finishes in a month and my son probably is going to grad school, but I think it'll be covered. So I may have no more payments anymore, which would be really great. Having two kids off the dime at the same time would be super sweet. But the the costs are astronomical for the average person. And we know about student loan debt and all that kind of stuff. It took me 9 years to pay off my debt when I was 22. I paid off when I was 31. Right away, bought a house from there. So I went from being in debt to having an appreciable asset. It's a very valuable thing, right, for a country. So I know recently USF, they did not make the tournament. I thought they should have. They have a huge win against a Big 12 team on the road. I think it was on the road in the NIT. Second round, they host a game. And I've only seen a little bit of the video. They ended up losing in the last seconds. Unbelievable scene. Lines out. No one used to go to USF games in Tampa. Lines out the door. The crowd, incredible. That happens more than once or twice. Like all of a sudden you get that going. And there's a vibe. And the kid that goes to USF, when he goes back, he goes back home in the offseason in the summertime and talks about how much fun it is to go to school there. And now more people apply. Well, that's when you start raising rates. Although Florida schools are not, we have a lot of bad things here. The prices of our school is a good thing. We're very cheap. One of the cheapest in the country for a good education. In some cases, a very good education. And so I don't know why they fight it, because it does help the brand. Sure. It doesn't make any sense to me, but it is what it is. Like the Ivy League schools could destroy most of them college sports they wanted to. There's plenty of smart athletes out there. You got to spend money to go get them. There's a very good player in Ivy League school who is probably, he's almost definitely going to transfer because he can't even get a manager to rebound for. Jesus. Well, at Alabama, they have 25. Between managers and GAs, it's like 24, 25. I'm not even kidding. Like there's hordes of them. And they told my son when he went to Florida State, anytime he wants to go shoot, we have a manager for you. You want to go shoot at 2 in the morning, give him a heads up, right? They got to make sure of class or whatever. They'll come rebound for you. That's not the way it is at some of these at the big Ivy League schools, but it could be.
Yeah.
They just don't want to spend their money. So,
and listen, the
ones that do.
The Harvard endowment, large enough for sure to do that if that's what they want.
All these Ivy Leagues, But even the Texas, Oklahoma State, Florida, they've got billions in endowments.
We can get into a whole conversation about the combination that we do in this country of academics and athletics, and I, you know, and my issues with that. But that's a conversation for a different day. I will say for college basketball, though, as we talked about in the article, it will make the sport better, make the NBA better, because you have more mature, better developed players ready to come in. I think we're still, it's not quite going to be though, right, David? That awesome superstar player probably still will leave when he's a freshman after his freshman year, right? As opposed to staying until he's a junior, because I'm going to go to the NBA and make, I'm going to be a lottery pick, I know for sure, or a number two pick or whatever. But you can develop a bunch of guys who, oh, we didn't think this guy was any good. Now he's a lottery pick, or now he's an NBA starter or whatever.
I think it's going to be a pretty complex, nuanced situation. The easy answer is the obvious top five, top 10 guy who doesn't have to work out for teams. The NIL is not going to be enough to pay what these guys can make, which is, you know, in $5-8 million a year. The interesting thing is the next rung down. So you might go 15, you might go 25. You come back, there's no guarantee that you can be the same. But you'll make maybe $500,000. I'm making up a number. Every school is different. As a hedge against what you might lose. And you might get your way into that top 10 status or whatever. A lot of colleges are going to be selling that. The agents, the good ones, will be pragmatic. Maybe it's true. Maybe it's not true. And you'll look into it. There's a lot of scumbags out there. There's a lot of agents who – I shouldn't say a lot of anything. There's a lot of everything everywhere. A lot of colleges are terrible too. They'll lie through their teeth. I used to tell players, they're going to tell you to come back to school because you'll raise your draft stock. Maybe you will. There's no guarantees. When they tell you you're definitely a lottery pick, then you know they're fucking lying to you. As I think we wrote this, because 14 months in advance is a very hard thing to give to guarantees for anything. You can show me math, but the math isn't in your favor. There is no math that says you're very likely to move up into a top 10 if you're not top 15, 20. When you come back, it's just the evidence isn't that it will. It's possible. Obviously, everything's possible. And so I think you'll have a really interesting mix every year. But I do think we'll have a lot less players staying in the pros because they're getting good money. Good money. Six figures is real money for any of them. I don't care where their family's from. As I said the last week, maybe J.J. Redick said $200,000 a bag. No matter how much money you make a year, he's right.
As a college student, imagine you were having $200,000? Yeah. Like,
but listen, If your dad could be a cardiologist, it's a lot of damn money.
Correct.
$200K. So I just think that's a number a lot of kids can make somewhere, that the really good ones, the ones that we're talking about potentially leaving for the NBA, can make that. And so if you slip out of the first round, you're likely getting two ways. Not guaranteed, right. Likely. And that's 560K this year, only if you keep it all year. There are players who get removed. It doesn't happen often, but you can lose your two-way slot. And it's not guaranteed at the end of the year either. But everything else is you're paying for, your apartment, your food. You go to college, it's room and board and lots of other, they feed you all the time, like they do in the NBA. My son never wants to go to a steak restaurant again with us, because it's all he's done for 4 years, 3 years of college after the pandemic. But you get room and board. So you get all that plus the 500K, let's say. Some guys, I heard today, someone told me they thought a player was getting 700. Drew Timme supposedly got 1 million. Like, there's different numbers out there depending on how good you are. We have to be really good. But the benefit of all this is going to be the NBA getting more guys coming in who've had more reps at the little parts of the game. And you'll be less dependent on the true teenagers. And the ones that do come out are just super gifted.
Right.
And there's a learning curve for them too, obviously. But it'll be faster for them. And so the NBA wins and college wins. It's great.
And that's the piece you just hit on at the end.
Money solves everything, Gerard. I mean,
shock of all shock. But that you hit it right ahead at the end. Yes, it's the money, but you also, it's if you're at the right place, you're lucky to school like Alabama with Ryan Pinone, it's the development that you get, right? So you actually learn how to play the game, right? You get more reps, you're working. So by the time David, you take this all the time. You go to the G League, you ain't seen a whole lot of development happening down there, right? So
I would, on that subject, and it's the end of the year, I get it. But I'm talking to some of the guys I talked to in the G League lately. I was asked them, what you guys doing walkthrough today? And they're like, I'm telling you this, coach, they told us to go have fun. Like, they're not going to make the playoffs. Go have fun. I'm just stunned. It's saddened. Not so stunned. More saddened than anything. And the other thing is, and I know we're not a college basketball show, but as someone who does have 20, soon to be 23-year-olds, both my kids have a network now the rest of their lives. Right. At the very least, they've got my daughter with her sorority, my son with his team, and the other people he met. Like you know this. There's a whole bunch of entrepreneurs out there that have built billion-dollar businesses with their college buddies, right? Or their parents, right? I find value in that. And I don't care if you're rich, poor, black, white, Asian, Latina, whatever. When you're in college, there's a chance to connect to a larger networking community, which has 50 years potentially to pay dividends for you. You don't get that going to the NBA ever. Yep. It just, you're on your own. You have your own CEO, you're the CEO of your own business immediately. And so I've always pushed guys to the pros because there's no money in college. If you thought there was definite money as a pro level, but now there's a real hedge against that with the NIL. So I think the college games will be better and better because it'll be men playing against men. And I think we'll get more of those men in the NBA when they come, and it'll be better for them.
For sure. All right, David, this thing I want to discuss here has really blown my mind, and I'm so, so surprised by it. And it's not because of who the player is, and I don't think he's very good. It's just like, what are these people watching? So I was originally looking at the NBA betting odds, and the reason why I looked at it, and again, we're not a gambling show. I want to be very clear about that. But the reason why I wanted to look at it was because every broadcast I turned into, I kept hearing, oh, Nikola Jokic, the surefire MVP, once Embiid went down, will be his third in 4 years. And I was like, why is everybody saying that? And it's not because Jokic isn't good. Of course, he's phenomenal. But he's not playing like the best player in basketball. And we have reasons. We've written about it, talked about why we think. He knows. I know when to turn it off for playoff time. He's probably playing 60, 70% coasting. We looked at the advanced metrics. He's top five, but he's not number one. You take out Joel Embiid because he was hurt. Okay, fine. David, overwhelmingly, the player who should be MVP is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and it's not close. Not only is his team, first of all, a half game above Denver for top spot in the West, number one, he's been playing like this all season long, and it's the betting houses, David, have Jokic minus 700, which basically, that's a sure thing. Then it's Luka at plus four, maybe. Shai is like plus 1,800, which is a long shot, and I'm like, I don't understand what. And then I look at narrative. Okay, what's the narrative? And I'm like, we talked about it on our call this morning. OKC is a rookie center they depend on, a second year wing in Jalen Williams. And I'm like, how is this? And Lu Dort, who's got playoff experience, but is not anybody's max player. SGA has this team. And of course, Mark Dignall and the infrastructure has this team playing like arguably the best team in basketball. By the way, second in adjusted net rating to the number one Boston Celtics. I don't know. What am I missing, David? What am I missing?
You know, I told you this before. I am so bad at knowing how voters would think. And I think media votes this, media, right? Mm-hmm. Only.
Yes, the MVP is only media. Yeah, pretty sure.
I know we're part of the media, but I don't think
that way. But this is the betting houses. Why do the betting houses think this? How do the...
Yeah, you're right. No, you're right. They must have... They'd normally pretty good at what they do.
My point is, which means he's going to win, because they know. They know he's going to win.
I don't understand. To me, it's not even close. If Jokic wanted to win, correct, he probably could win. But he chose not to. What SGA is doing, if you look today, we're in April now, okay? He could end the season right now if he wanted to and save himself for the playoffs, and no one would complain, really. They're the first seed. They got a rookie center, a second-year power forward who's a small forward, right? A diminutive point guard that is good, solid, right? An Australian that only now is starting to shoot a little bit, very slow, in his third year. And Isaiah Joe.
I don't get it.
You know, and a freshman from Kentucky. Yeah. Who's shooting really well. It starts with Shea. Jalen Williams is terrific. And a great coach. It starts with Shea. He's carrying a team. He's Michael Jordan right now. Right, I'm not saying he's good as Michael Jordan, but he's doing what Jordan did with the Bulls. And I tell you, wouldn't it be – he can't do it against Cleveland, but they've not won a playoff series in a long time. Wouldn't it be sweet for him on games? It was maybe game five when Jordan did it, the Craig Elo shot. But SGA running left, jump in the air, hanging, putting his feet up, nail the jumper to win it. That'd be nice because he's kind of being that guy right now on both ends.
That's the huge difference. I mean, defensively, the metrics, first of all, that's not even close. Like, he is far superior defensively, metrically, than Jokic. And again, this is not anti-Jokic. Everyone should have listened to this spot. We love Nikola Jokic here. Like, and think when he wants to be, he is the best player in the world. But the MVP is who's been the best player all season long. He has not been that. It has been SGA.
That's why we have metrics. We have metrics. And while we're on this subject, I have a pet peeve I never have aired, but I need to air it now. Okay. In football, it's one side of the ball or the other side of the ball. Because the ball is in one spot most of the game. It's just sitting there. And you line up on one side or the other. In basketball, it's one end and the other end. It's not side of the ball. It's a ball. There's multiple sides. And the ball is moving all the time. It's almost never not moving. So can we please be, when people talk about SGA, who does it on both sides of the ball? No. He said does it on both ends of the court. Thank you. I'll get off my soapbox. But what he's done defensively is no small thing. It is significant because he's also maintained his offensive edge. It'd be different if his offense dropped so he could lead the defensive team, be top five. He has done both. You're right. I don't understand. I don't think it's hard.
I don't either.
I'm doing some national media this week. I'm going to start talking about it. I don't understand how he's not the clear-cut MVP for
me. And this, I guess, where narrative comes in. I'm like, but what's the narrative that's so pro-Jokic and so anti? I don't. Right. What's the story? Tell me the story in Denver that makes, defending champs. Okay, great.
Jokic, did he not outperform Embiid last year metrically?
He did.
Yeah, last year. So they didn't even give it to the metric winner last year, so there's precedent.
Correct.
Makes no sense. Again, that's why we have these advanced metrics. You can argue with them if you want to. I do. Sure. But it's not close this year. I've looked. Embiid, if he plays enough games, is the clear cut.
Sure.
We both agree to that. Yeah. But he didn't. Yeah, I wish I could help you, Gerard.
Listen, and ultimately, it's fine. It's just more like, wow, how do you guys figure?
We don't care.
It's like, what's your thought process here? Yeah. But again, and it's listen, he's going to win it because Vegas is, they're not wrong about stuff like this. When the odds are that stacked, they're not wrong. They know. And it's just like, okay, sure, it's going to happen. And by the way, kudos to Jokic because he probably should have three anyway, right? But you probably should have won last year, but is what it is. So. We are where we are.
Right. We call that during the game, we call it a makeup call.
It's a makeup award. They do that in everything, like in the Oscars. Ooh, we probably should have given you one for that one. All right, we'll give you one for this one. It's like, but what? Okay, sure. It's fine. All right, guys. Enjoy the end of the regular season, the last 7-8 games. We'll be back on Thursday. We might do bottom five on Thursday, David, or like most disappointing teams this season.
I like it.
And we'll talk about why, like, and then we'll start getting... We won't even, I was going to say we'll have some clarity. We won't have that much clarity in the next 2 days for playoffs. Not much, because we'll have, probably two games will be played, so not a ton of clarity.
No, it's going to come to the end of this last week of the season.
We're going
to
be really working our way down, but then we might do some different stuff once we know and have some playoff previews and really dig down into what we think is going to happen. All right, everybody, enjoy.